the child doesn't exactly know what's going on. The parent doesn't exactly know what's going on in the classroom to support the child. And I've definitely been in the position where my mummy hat gives me insights about how a child shows up as a learner, or my teacher hat gives me insights about how the child, what might be happening with the child at home. And the more that we can create channels for communicating effectively between school, tutor, child, and home, the family life, the more we can support the child. So thinking about being the team around the child in this case means having a really effective line of communication. So Claire, you and I have spoken about how you email notes to parents at the end of sessions and how rarely they reply. And then every so often they'll pop up and say, I love those notes. I really appreciate them. So, you know, I will always call myself out as a mum. I'm one of those. I'll stay quiet for 6 weeks and then pop up with a bajillion questions all in one go. And that's just how it is. But for me, what it comes down to really is trust. It's trust in the relationship. And if we can create trustful relationships between the parent and the tutoring process is more effective for the student. Claire, Dee, Julie, Elizabeth, what are your thoughts on that? Okay, so let's go further. So we talk about building relationships with parents and we talk about signaling trust. And I would love to know from you what parents need to know. So we've discussed in the past, parents need to know how to work with you, when to pay with you, when to pay you, how to find your online links. They need to know, as Alexia said, how to follow up when you've given them some good advice, or to make sure that the notebook's available at the end of the set, you know, before the session, or whatever it is. Having those resources available is a really key element. I was interviewed yesterday for Metro magazine, and for a woman who's writing a parenting column. And I was struck by how little she knew. I was struck by how little parents know about tutoring. And how sometimes we need to show up as the pro, the consultant, yeah? And sometimes we need to drop those, oh, thanks, Julie. Sometimes we need to drop our formality and be really, really relatable and talk about how it is with our own children and getting that balance right. So as I say, I'm preparing a session for parents next week, and that session will educate them as to what a qualified tutor looks and feels like. And what I want to be able to say is, these tutors are all pre-vetted. When you come into this room, we've checked their DBS and their safeguarding, like any head teacher would when bringing a new staff member into a school. So you know that the adult who's working with your child is as safe as we can appropriately check right now. You then need to build a rapport with them. And this is where this journalist was really intrigued, because she was really intrigued by the idea of choosing a tutor that she felt rapport with and being given permission to choose an educator in that way. So I think it's really interesting that we all went to school and we were all taught to get what we were given and follow the curriculum that was given to us and comply with the teacher who's in front of us. And there's very much that situation in school that if a year three teacher is a bit of a mare, there's really nothing to do for that whole year for your child. You've just got to hold her hand through it and get through it together. If the science GCSE teacher doesn't have a handle on the class, you know your child's got a problem. They're not going to get the grades unless you bring in some intervention. So that's when the parent has to learn to be proactive. Now, I know I'm telling you things you already know, but I think what's interesting is that parents don't. Yeah? Tutors are this niche in the education system. We think about how little parents understand school, they understand tutors even less. They understand the way that we work even less. They understand the options that are in front of them even less. I met with this morning with somebody who is a well-being coach for children, and she's written the most glorious series of storybooks where the coach can work through the storybooks with the children and give them words for their feelings, understand zones of comfort and how to move through zones of comfort, understand what walls we create for our own. You know, I was talking with her and I realized that I decided when I was 8 years old that I don't do sports. And at 44 years old, this is becoming a problem because I need to do exercise. But those thoughts that get rooted very early on are defining. Parents don't necessarily know that. We in this room know that because we work with children in a way that's really in their heads. We get to a point when we're tutoring really effectively where we sort of become mind readers. We know the child, we know their patterns, we know their triggers, we know which bits they're afraid of, we know how they respond when they're afraid. We know when they're off today because we know them in their subject. As a mum, I know my kids really, really well, but I don't know them in that way. I know what they're interested in. I know how they fight with their siblings. I know what kind of cuddles they need and what teddies they sleep with. I know how to care for them physically, but I don't necessarily know how to relate to them as learners. And I think it's really interesting to understand how specialist tutors are in interpreting the child as a learner and guiding that learner. Julie, you've made your coffee, and I've spoken more than I usually speak. So I'd love to hear some of your thoughts.
So I was just going to say, this is really interesting. Dee and I have just been in a different meeting, and this came up, this idea of trust between the parent and the tutor. And I'm sorry, Dee, you're going to have to listen to it again. I've said recently, I interview parents and students before we start tuition.
It's a two-way interview.
It is. It's a three-way interview because the kids are important too. The kids are the ones that have got the veto at the end.
Lovely.
I don't know where I was going. Like, there were two things I was going to say. So I start these interviews that aren't interviews with, there's no obligation. Any one of us can say no. Right? Oh, thank you, Dee. Any one of us can say no. And that includes the child, because you do get those parents where before you've even opened your mouth, they're like, where do we sign? Right. And I don't necessarily want though. I mean, I do, but I don't necessarily want them. I want to know what that relationship is going to work, look like, and what it's how it's going to work. And that involves the student as well, which brings me on to the second story, which was, I had a student interviewed with his parent a couple of years ago, and started asking him, like, what do you think about this idea of getting a tutor? And he was like, well, mum says I've got to. And I'm like, oh, great. Yeah. I'm like, so what does that mean? And he says, well, so I've got to have a tutor. I'm like, okay, so what we need to do now is we need to have a discussion, because are you going to say yes just because mum says you've got to? Or are you going to say yes and then not do any work with me? Or do you really mean, yeah, I need some help? Because there are a couple of options there from that mum says I've got to. And if it had just been him and I think I might have got a different response to that question. I was able to see mum's reaction to him, and it turns out he's just really cheeky. So I did say, like, if you're not going to work with me, that we need to think about whether there's any point going forward, right? If you're not going to work with me, then it's a waste of your time, it's a waste of my time, it's a waste of mum's money. I need to know you're going to work with me, and this is up to you, which is why I say the children have got the final veto, because those parents that are, yes, we're going ahead, I do say, like, if the child says to me in a week or two's time, like, I really don't want this, then I'll stop the lessons, because it just makes problems bigger, doesn't it, if there's that friction. Anyway, this particular student who was having a tutor because mum said so, He's been with me for 2 years. I've just started teaching his younger brother as well. He is one of my favorites. He is just a cheeky little monster. During our interview, I get them to play on bit paper, and he's writing like, his name is the best. I am epic. And at that point, I start writing little comments like, are you though? Really? Are you sure about this? And he's cheeky, and he needs to get that cheek back, right? You can't take everything he says as what he means, because half the time he's just pulling your chain. When I started using pencil spaces, he's the student that told me, well, why are you using bit paper then if you've got this and it does so much more? I'm like, because I don't know my way around it. And he's, well, let's go and have a look. I'm supposed to be teaching you physics. Yeah, let's go and have a look. And he tried his best to break it. He figured out that if I opened up a web browser, he can go in and he can go back a couple of pages and he can find out all my search history. Right, no!
Wow, that's a good discovery.
And so now it's locked, absolutely locked, right? It's on private when I'm putting in any passwords that I need. It's locked for students when I'm using it, so I can use it, but they can't. And I make sure I close it down when I come out, right? Yeah, but he taught me that. He's really good. But his idea was, okay, I'm just going to see what I shouldn't be able to do, but I can. I'm going to try and not break it, but I'm going to try and find out what I shouldn't be able to do, which has taken us miles away from parents. So
no,
trust,
not at all.
Trust with parents is absolutely huge. That's and right. There are ways of figuring out where that trust is and whether you're going to have it or not. And I think it's not just that parents need to trust us, but we need to trust that we're going to be able to work with that parent. Because if we can't, it doesn't work.
So, okay, so what you showed me there was all the ways that you show up in a trustworthy way, yeah? That you don't just take the business because it fills another hour of your schedule. That you don't just take the business because you tutor physics and he needs physics. You took the business because you believed that you could work with the child and the parents. So what does a parent, Alexia and I just started with this theme, what does a parent need to be work withable? Because we know what that means. We know that when it comes to the child, it's for us to create that work withable culture, yeah? What does it mean for a parent to be work withable? And what does a not work withable parent look like? And of course, it's different in different contexts.
Yeah, that's a good question. Go on, Claire, I'm going to shut up.
Well, I was just going to say, sometimes you can't identify it. I took on a new student. Now, I always give the first lesson free because they're getting used to technology and getting used to me and how I work and things. I had a brilliant one last week. Little assessment, and she didn't know what she was doing, and I said, right, we can teach you this. By the end of it, she understood. I sent off my report like I usually do on the Friday, and then I got a very polite message from Mum. We've carefully considered this and decided that you are not a match for my daughter, and we think it's very important to find the right match. And I don't know why, and that's quite, I got to balance it with the fact that I've taken on 3 new students in the past week. So not all of them are going to want you. So your thing about you are a choice, but it's hard not to take it personally. But I don't know why I wasn't a match, but it was a very polite email.
Bear, that was so awesome. That was so honest and generous for you to share that story, because I often think about how vulnerable we are as tutors, and how you don't have that vulnerability as a parent, as a teacher. They always have to show up. They chose the school. They didn't choose the specific teacher. And so you have, you know, the job security in teaching is not only about the salary. It's about a set of students that are guaranteed to show up for you every year. And that idea that they can choose you not only on your skill, but also on whether or not they want to work with you, it's really personal. And I'd love to hear what your thoughts are, the rest of the room, about coping with that personal. And you know, Claire's lucky that she had two people that said yes, or three people that said yes in the same week that somebody said no, because a conversion rate of 75% is successful in any business. But how do you not let it get personal? Do you go ahead?
The majority of my students I actually get through a tutoring business. And up to now, I haven't asked for the first session to be with both the student and the parent. I'm hoping that the parent's going to turn up, but I don't, you know, formally interview or request that. And it's something I'm thinking about how I need to kind of rework that. Before the summer, I had one of the students through this business, and the business told me that they weren't going to be coming back after the summer break. In fact, I had two students it was after the summer, the Whitsun half term, and I had two students both through this business, and I was told they weren't coming back.
Sorry, what's Whitsun?
Sorry, the summer half term, the June.
Okay.
The June half term. Beg your pardon. Yes. Apologies. Maybe I'm very, very old fashioned now calling it the Whitsun, probably. Anyway.
Claire does too. Which doesn't mean you're old fashioned. It just means you say it differently. Go ahead.
Okay. So it was two on the same day. Yes. When I was told, you know, how my next half term is going to look, these two students aren't coming back. I took it personally. I was upset that, for whatever reason, that they didn't feel that, and there were perhaps not just, it didn't feel there was a good fit. There might have been financial issues. I don't know. But I'm, you know, two years ago, I'd have taken it really, really hard. But through, and I have to say, this is, you know, Jack, Sarah Lynn, the other sessions that I've done in through QT, reflecting on it and the discussions about, you know, it's a two-way thing. It's got to be a fit in both directions. And if for whatever reason the parent doesn't think it's a good fit, or the student doesn't think it's a good fit, if it isn't a good fit, it isn't a good fit. And I'm not going to be the best fit for every student. It's, you know, I can't be all things to all people. I cannot be that person.
I love that.
So it's, it, you know, yes, I, you know, I'm disappointed, but, you know, if that's the way it is, if there's somebody out there who's a better fit, then clearly that's going to be better for the child. So I'm trying, you know, and I haven't stressed about it. And I have given myself a pat on the back for not stressing about it, because that's really not usually the way I do things.
Yeah. If you still need that pat on the back, it's worth reframing it for you. So yes, it's probably better for the student, but it's also better for you because it opens up space in your timetable for the right student.
Mm, exactly.
And maybe you need that space for the right student to fit into. I must admit, some of the students I've left that have left me, I've gone, that's good, because that lesson was a drain. That's the lesson I was dreading all day, and it's always the last one of the day. And thank heavens I don't need to go through that again. Or thank heavens I won't have that parent messaging me six times the night before their lesson with an answer to a question I gave her after their last lesson last week. You know, she takes a whole week to get back to me. And then when I don't respond within 30 seconds, she's hassling me. So I've got rid of her. That's good. They've gone. It's lovely.
That phrase of their dream.
I have to admit that those two students, one of them, she was, you know, the parent would start the Zoom call and then summon the child. The child was there and was engaged, but it was, you know, I didn't feel like I was making the progress that I would have liked, that I knew the child was capable of, because
it was managed.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the other student, again, it was, she was there, and engaged, but it was just something not quite happening. I didn't get the same buzz from those two students that I get from all of my Wednesday. I love Wednesdays.
Thursdays for the same reason.
Yeah, you know, I've got five back to back between 1 o'clock and 6:30, and they're all, apart from the last one who's new, who turns up half an hour late for a 45-minute session. But you know, that again, thinking about, you know, engagement and management of things, I haven't had that why are you here conversation. I'm now thinking, actually, perhaps I'd better have that conversation with that student.
That's really interesting. Alexia, you were nodding vociferously just now when Julie said that sometimes there is
vociferously
move on for the right reasons. Could you tell us about that?
Well, no, actually, I have the opposite problem. I mean, I'm very fortunate that I've only ever had one person say, probably not going to carry on, and it's the fact it was online rather than face-to-face. I have the problem where I struggle that there is a day that I dread and there's a lesson I don't particularly enjoy. And I put a comment in, I value courtesy, and it's the same student and parent. And they've turned up late and the school run and everything else, and it's an A-level student. And I said, well, okay, I won't charge for next lesson because you've missed some and I don't want you paying for a service you haven't had and everything, because I am quite soft and I know I need to change that. And my text was ignored, there wasn't a thank you. And I just think that really, really irritates me. But that aside as well, I just don't feel I'm gelling with the student, but I struggle to say no. So we've had a few lessons and there is so much pressure now, isn't there, to get your tutoring sorted. And am I going to be letting them down at this stage if I say, you know what, I'm not really sure I am the right person for your child. I don't know. I find it really difficult. What can I say? I mean, they say they enjoy the lessons. They say they're learning things. But I do. I kind of, my timetable, when I look at it, I'm just focused on that one lesson thinking, oh, no.
Wow. So it sort of looms large.
Yeah, I mean, not over the top. I don't kind of lose sleep over it. But yeah, I kind of look at it and think, oh, how's it going to go? And whereas some, the buzz you get when you have that student who you really enjoy, you have a laugh. And it's almost like spending time with friends in a way, isn't it? Sometimes if you have a really great lesson.
Especially at A-level.
Yeah, and they're wonderful. And then you have these others where it's such a chore and how can I keep them entertained and everything? And I'm just, that's my problem rather than the other way. And I perhaps have been quite fortunate in that respect.
Well, I think that, you know, we always talk about finding your niche in tutoring, don't we? And I think that the clearer you are about which kind of a tutor you are, that there are some tutors that love working with children who are bouncing off the walls and need, you know, entertainment all the way through the session. That's how they get their energy too, or that's how they're making a difference. And then there are some tutors who love just having a good explore of the subject with a student who's really interested in it as well. So there's lots of different ways, but I think what strikes me in the story of the parent not bothering to be courteous and the child not gelling, I strongly feel that my kids benefit from knowing how much I trust the tutors that they work with. And I know that when I let it slip to my children that I don't necessarily take their teacher seriously, that a little bit, you know, is problematic for them. There's a massive influence that the parents can have in improving the tutoring relationship. So I wonder whether sometimes when you're not gelling with a student, it's not for you to fix, it's for the parents to fix, or it's for you to reach out to the parents to fix. I once spoke with a tutor who was extremely worried. She's quite an anxious type. And she had all her eggs in one basket. There was one student that she was working with three times a week. And she wasn't getting on with the family. So there was nothing wrong with the child, but there was a really problematic relationship with the mum. And she said, I can't stop working with the child. Not only because I can't afford to have three gaps in my schedule right now. You know, it was in the middle of the term. But also because the mum's a bully. And I know that she will slam me on social media if I stop working with them. And that vulnerability really struck me also.
I intend to go. I mean, this student I've actually got through an online agency. It's not direct through my own website. And so, yes, at the moment, all my reviews are 5-star, and I do not want that to change. I don't want her to go on there and say 1-star dropped us because this didn't work or that didn't work. And yeah, that's a big factor in why I'm persevering. Absolutely.
Yeah. And again, it's a thing that you don't have to worry about as a class teacher. And therefore, we really need to look at it as a tutor. That nobody Trustpilots the GCSE physics teacher. You know, you don't have to worry about what Trustpilot says.
No, but you do have to worry about what performance management says and what your line manager says at the school. So it's still important. You don't like getting complaints in a school either.
That's really helpful. Thank you. I think you're absolutely right. I do think that you know, as much as we rail against accountability agendas in school, the performance measures are different, yeah? And they might, I don't know if they're more accurate or less accurate. I don't know. On the one hand, school leadership are evaluating your planning and your professional conduct and your outcomes. On the other hand, a parent is evaluating how easy you are to work with in relation to how much you charge and what the outcomes of your child are and whether or not he bounces out of your sessions. Yeah, but I just think it's interesting for us to set ourselves up for success. So this keyword of vulnerability keeps coming back to me in this conversation, because when Dee says, I didn't take it so personally this time, and referred to the support that Jack and Sarah Lynn have given you, I think that it's quite interesting to know that the more we build ourselves up as professionals and are proactive about our own professional conduct, the less personal, the less vulnerable it feels to be out there as a freelance educator. And therefore, there's also a sense of, I don't need parents to judge my delivery. I don't need school leaders to come in and judge my delivery, because I can evaluate my own delivery based on what I know good practice looks like. So I'd love to know from you what's on your mind right now in terms of your tutoring practice. Is it the business? Is it teaching and learning? Is it filling your schedule? Is it overfilling your schedule? Is it people pleasing? What are the things that are on your mind at the moment?
I think just from the conversation this morning, it's considering the roller coaster of it. I remember being a teacher, I've said before, it wasn't the place for me at all, and the stress of it and the teaching interview and things like that. You go self-employed as a private tutor, and my first relief was I never have to do another teaching interview, because they're horrendous. But then it's a different roller coaster, but it's a little bit of a smoother roller coaster, because balancing what I just said before about a student dropping out quite late compared to others. But I just found out yesterday that one of my Nudge students got his maths GCSE and now is in college and doesn't need Nudge anymore, which is great, because that's the point of Nudge,
yeah.
To not need Nudge anymore. And I remember in September last year, online, him sitting between his parents and his mum saying he won't do an exam because school says he can't, he's not capable. And he got his grade in his GCSE. So it's that roller coaster of, you get an email saying, we don't want you. Then you get an email from a parent saying, he's going to college and he wouldn't have done it without you. So there's a real up and down goes on, but it's nowhere near the downs that I had as a teacher.
So on the one hand, it's sharper. It's a, we don't want you, compared to you changed our lives. Those are sharp edges. But on the other hand, you're saying that that there was something about working in a school that knocked you lower than you could afford to be knocked. Alexia, do you mind if I call on you again? Because we've not had you in one of these conversations yet. And what's happening here is that I basically know so much about Claire, Julie, Dee and Elizabeth. And I would love to know what your story into tutoring is. Would you mind?
Yes. Excuse me. I've got COVID at the moment, so I'm struggling with my deep voice and everything. So I don't normally sound quite this throaty. So just bear with me. But yeah,
oh, you poor thing, Alexia.
I think I've got off quite lightly, actually. I don't have a fever or anything, so I'm okay. I'm still tutoring.
Well done.
Yes. Yeah, so I qualified 20 odd years ago, worked my way up. I've been a deputy head in a couple of private schools. I've worked in state schools as well. My last private school up in Cumbria was absolutely horrendous. The head teacher was an absolute bully, would target staff and say, that's the one I want to get out next. I couldn't go with that. That's not the way I am. If they're not working right, you improve them. You don't just try and bully them out. So I packed it all in, set up a dog walking business and tutored in the evenings.
I knew I liked you.
So then, of course, COVID hit and I couldn't do my dog walking anymore. So I thought, my goodness, what am I going to do? So then I was on Tutor Hunt is the website I'm on. And it kind of came about by that. I thought, I don't think I can do online. I'm not that kind of person. I'm not really keen on speaking on the phone. Why would I want to sit in front of a screen and speak? But you know what? I loved it. And so I've carried on. And then I work at an online school as well as tutoring part time.
Which online school are you working with?
I'm working with Minerva Virtual Academy.
Oh, lovely.
I do that part-time, but since September, I've stopped the dog walking now. My neighbour's got it, so it's still going on. So that was
the dogs aren't getting fat because you're not walking them.
Oh, yes. So I'm afraid Adette spoke to me, and it was very soon after I did it, and the tears were coming, and I felt terrible.
Oh, gosh. Adette gets the gushes. She does.
But no, I mean, I've set up my own website. It's the GeoTutor. And I'm loving it. The only problem I've got is I want more to come through my website and less to come through Tutor Hunt.
Okay, well, so that's a business question. I had a conversation this morning with our website guy who's really good at SEO. So do you know much about SEO?
I haven't a clue what SEO is.
Okay, good. Search engine optimization. So basically what they do is they take your website, and Josh is a QT partner. I'll ping you his details in a second. He'll give you a special discount. And what he does is he creates hooks in your website for key terms so that when somebody is looking for a tutor in your subject, you rank highly on the Google search. The other thing that might be interesting for you is parent open days. So QT are running parent open days roughly every 6 weeks this year. So the first one, the first one is next Wednesday. And it's an opportunity for parents to come in and meet tutors in each subject. And I will be introducing each tutor in advance, what their specialism's in, what their style is. And then parents will be able to go and meet with you in a breakout room and interview you and have a confidential consultation, 5 minutes or so, just to see if it's a good match. So I think that what's really interesting, well, I tell you, one of the things that you've just mentioned that really piqued my interest is the role of a deputy head. The position that I had in school was sort of a deputy head. It was a faith school, so we were delivering two curricula at the same time. And so the Jewish curricula was run by my colleague, and I was delivering the national curriculum. So we had two separate staffs running, but really this sort of interaction between the two head teachers. She actually just sent me a chocolate mousse cake last week and a thank you card. We haven't worked together for 4 years. And she says that she still walks around the school remembering the conversations that we used to have together. So when that partnership is good, it's so, so good. But when you've got a bully and you are implementing their strategies, that can be destroying. You went the wrong way. Go do it again. Oh, she's gone. So that role of school leadership that can feel quite soul destroying, I think, is a really interesting element, you know. And again, to think about parents and how much we need their trust and their relationship between school, tutor, child, and the home life and building those relationships of trust and supporting the child to just not just get their academic outcomes, but actually work towards the life outcomes that all of us really know that it's all about, is a massive responsibility. It's a joy, but it's a responsibility. And, you know, Claire mentioned the deep, deep lows. And I can really relate to that. And I can relate to that in the children also. There's so many of the children that we're working with who are breaking and they don't realize why.
Yeah. I mean, it was a really tough time. And I think it did come through with the students obviously knew what was happening in terms of all the staff kind of fearing the person as well. And it is really, it has such a huge impact, doesn't it, on everybody in your academic life and your personal life and everything.
That's right. And then the positive side of that, the ripples of positivity that you can create when you're making good choices for yourself that go to your students, to your family in every direction and the dogs you're walking. Those are all well-being choices that make a massive. So I ran this workshop a few weeks ago as an inset for a staff of 40 primary school tutors. There was a dual form entry and they were so lovely. And I worked with them on the structure of safe, skilled and supported. And I asked them what it would mean to feel safe in school, way beyond safeguarding training, what it would mean to actually feel safe. And they spoke about being able to go and ask for help. And what would it actually mean to feel secure, to feel skilled? And we looked at competencies and what competencies are needed to be able to cope in a school. And then supported, and that sense of being part of something bigger than yourself. And I have this feeling that if we were able to give that to teachers, they wouldn't have to leave the classroom. If we were able to help them to feel safe, skilled and supported, we could turn the tide on recruitment and retention in schools, which wouldn't do us out of a job as tutors, because there's always independent, individualized work that needs to be done with children. But it does seem like the collateral damage, as we all sit here, the majority of us here are ex-teachers, as we all sit here, we could be running classrooms if we were able to build these kind of structures and this kind of trust inside the education system.
You're bringing to mind when I first started my teacher training, I was 38, so I'd lived a little bit and worked in other industries. And I remember sitting in the lecture hall at Sunderland University, and one of the first things that the lecturer said, and I can't remember what the percentage was, but he said, a certain percentage of you will not be teaching in 5 years' time. And I remember sitting there and thinking, that won't be me. I lasted 4 years. I was so determined.
I lasted two.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. This is only one hand going up in almost all cases. Wow. Go ahead, Claire.
Really, I'd finished there. It was just, you're talking about retention, and that's how they started a university lecture on our first day.
So I went to an event for the Chartered College of Teaching where Dylan Williams, who is just, you know, the superstar of research in education. And at the Q&A at the end, somebody put their hand up, really fresh-faced, sweet young woman. And she said, I've just finished my NQT year. Do you have any advice for me about how to survive? And the whole room was deflated. You know, you could feel the ripple of empathy through the room.
I also remember once getting into schools and into classrooms and things, as it dawned on me that this wasn't the place for me, I was looking around and thinking, there's too many people here that have gone too far up the pay scale and they can't get out. So it's not, you know, I feel so lucky that I made that decision while I was, if you like, at the lowest of the pay grade and hadn't made my way up, because there's a lot of teachers that just can't get out or are frightened to get out because there is that little bit of security there that is different in tutoring, especially if you're establishing yourself from nothing.
Yeah. Alexia, do you mind if I ask you about the crying moment?
Yes, it's okay.
What made you cry? We know how it feels. That's why I'm asking.
I think I just felt totally overwhelmed. I'd literally 3 days in, my timetable is so full. I'm struggling with saying no because the demand is so great and I love to make a difference. And I think some of these people who are saying, oh, my child wants help with this syllabus and I examine for that syllabus and I think I could really make a difference. And then I look at my time and think, goodness, when am I going to plan all of this? When am I going to spend time with the people who matter to me? And it's just, I'm kind of overwhelmed. At the moment, I'm not going to cry, I'm okay. I'm paddling like mad underneath just to keep on top of my work.
Yeah.
Do the best I can do for everyone, for school, for my individual students, for family. Everybody wants a piece of me. And that's fine. And I've got bills to pay at the end of the day. And, you know, if I can make a decent living from tutoring, I'm delighted. But that's where I'm at. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of things online say, oh, you undercharge, you do this. And I think that's an individual thing. What you charge is what you charge. I think there are some people out there that are sort of charging £75 an hour, which I find staggering for some. But if people are prepared to pay it, I get it. I'm more into it from the kind of, I want to help, but yes, I want to pay my bills. And it's just that I just felt completely lost.
You know, Ken Robinson's thing, The Element, which is a thing that you are good at doing and you love to do. Yeah. And that when you find your element, it's a joy. It's a joy. I think that overwhelm, especially, you know, when you're blessed with being busy and booked up and then having to manage it, it feels like, am I allowed to complain about this? Is this allowed to be a problem for me? So Julie and Dee and I were in a session yesterday with the amazing Katie Stone, who's a virtual assistant. She left primary school classroom and she was one of those overachieving teachers. And now she loves employing teachers as VAs that work to work alongside her because she says we are all so conscientious. What she's done is she says, find ways to lighten your load by giving away the jobs that you're not good at, that take too much time, that are too much of a drain. So the first thing that she outsourced was cleaning, but all of the things that you can do, right? So we can't outsource our family, yeah? And then after that, there are some magic things that you do as a tutor, the working one-to-one with children, the building understanding that you can't outsource. But then there are other things like websites and scheduling that can be outsourced for a lower hourly rate than you currently charge. And those simple things, you know, we don't learn in school. There's a lovely phrase of, you know, we tend to wait for the bell to ring. You know, we grew up in school on a timetable that tells us to move classrooms every 50 minutes. Doesn't make any sense in the slightest, but that's how we were drilled. We were drilled to wait for the bell to ring and then move. And when you go it alone, you have to ring your own bell. Yeah. You have to notice what you need and take responsibility. You have to notice when you crash and work out why. And it's a joy, but it's hard, hard, hard. Go on, Julie.
I was going to say, if you can, find it before you crash. Right?
Can you give me those eyes, please? Because I don't necessarily have those.
But what I'm hearing from Alexia, I missed some of it. I'm sorry, the dog went bonkers. So, and I lose signal part way. So I get the impression you're relatively new to this. You've been in school, you've left school, bullying environment, and you're fairly new to this tutoring thing. I get what you're saying about not wanting to put your price up too much, but you need to earn some money, and you already 3 weeks in are feeling the pressure. You're doing this for the next 9 months. You've got to sort it now and sort it quickly. Right. I also get the wanting to give back, because I've got my wanting to give back hat on as well. So I was really brave a couple of weeks ago and I put my prices up. I put them up over the summer holiday. I've put them up again. They're now stupid, right? But I can discount. I can work with an agency that doesn't pay me anywhere near what I charge. And that is where I'm helping the kids that need the help.
Oh, just give Julie, you missed a truck trick there. You didn't explain that that was the alternative provision bit.
Yeah, so I was about to say that. That is an agency that provides alternative provision and they don't pay my hourly rate by any means, but I'm still giving back to the kids that really, really need it. So you can do both. But if you are only 3 weeks into this and you're already feeling the pressure, start working on it, because by Christmas, you're going to crumble. And you're important. Everybody's important. Tutors are really important. I'm sorry. It's, you know, sometimes you need someone to give you a slap with a wet fish. Right? You don't want to put your prices up tough. Do it anyway. You need to lose some of your students, but you need to keep your income. If you want to do the feel good thing, find a way of doing it. Have a scholarship, right? Where you actually don't charge someone at all. If that's what's going to do it for you, then do that. Right? Put your prices sky high. And when you have that parent that comes to you and says, I'd really like to, but I can't, you make that decision as to whether or not you're going to reduce your prices, because it's your business and you've got that right. You've got that power, you've got that authority.
You know what Risa says, your business, your rules.
Yeah, but you, if I'm right and you are 3 weeks into this, you've got to do something now. You've got to.
Go ahead.
I also put my prices up this summer and I expected a fall off. Not one person left me. And there was one who I've never put the prices up. He was my second ever student in 2016 and he was in primary. I can't believe he's now in year 10. It's so frightening. But I was particularly worried because her price hike went much higher compared to what she'd been paying. And she just said, I understand, but we want to keep you. And that was all the conversation we had. So yes, don't be too frightened about putting the prices up. As long as you don't go too high, obviously, in one big lump. The only concession I've made is I work with two brothers and the older one is in year 11. So I said to the mum, for the two brothers, I'll keep the price the same until the year 11 finishes. And then the younger one will have to go up to the price of everybody else. But I'm the same price now across the board.
Again, it comes back to trustworthiness.
Yeah.
You know, to be successful and sustainable as a tutor, you have to build systems that you can live with. And it's not if you hurtle towards burnout, that's not sustainable. And you can end up letting your students down just when you need them, they need you the most. So building systems that make things sustainable for you is part of what trustworthiness is.
I could be really horrible and point out that you said you've got COVID or you're recovering from COVID, and that only happens when you run down. That's not true. It doesn't only happen. You're more likely to suffer illness when you are run down and
go ahead, Alexia.
Not well.
Go ahead, Alexia.
Works in the NHS, so I'm pretty sure that's the reason.
But if your immune system was at full capacity, you'd have better chance of fighting it off.
I do agree, and I thought I'd be okay because while I was transitioning from the dog walking to the tutoring, I was literally I've got somebody from China as a contact, and I was doing geography tutoring for Chinese students first thing,
Yes. Sashing
out, doing the dog walking, then coming back. So all through the summer, I love the way everyone's saying, oh, we're 3 weeks in. And I'm thinking, I'm not 3 weeks
in. I know.
I've never had such a busy summer in my life.
Yeah.
It's great because, I mean, it was a normal quiet time, I suppose, the money came in. But yeah, everyone who's like, oh, we're back to it. And I'm thinking, I've never blooming stopped. But yeah, maybe that. And then the emotional up and down as well. And
yeah,
I do accept.
Alexia, do you know Sarah Capewell ran a, she's got a course about building a tutoring business, and her story is that in order to have time with her family, she realized that she needed to tutor students abroad, and she decided to work with Chinese students, and she has a really thriving business with students based in China. And then when they come over, she's even built out now a guardianship service where she's actually holding their hands once they get into the boarding school that she's helped them get into. So ways of making the work for you is really nuanced, and everybody's finding different ways to do it. But that thing that Risa Connolly said last week of your business, your rules, that's really stuck with me. What a juicy conversation. Two summers ago, we ran Clubhouse meetings, I think a couple of times a week. And because it was the summer and we were having a conversation about well-being, and somebody in the group called me out that I was actually on holiday whilst I was running that session. Now, you guys know that we were all meeting all the way through the summer, right? So Sarah Capewell said this. She said that she didn't need a 2-month summer holiday once she was working for herself because she didn't burn out. So there's lots of right ways to do it. And it's really nice to have friends who will call you out and say, remember to look after yourself. I went to the doctors for a checkup today because my mother told me to. So we all need reminders to stay healthy and care for ourselves, right? And always in a safe way, and always coming from the right place, and not with any judgment. I know that if our staff rooms felt like this conversation, there'd be fewer teachers leaving schools. And I really hope that by having these kinds of conversations, we can show up for our students in a way that really, really helps them and helps the families too. Because, you know, Julie, you started off by saying that parents are so desperate to sign, they don't even finish the interview. Mm. That desperation is a real feeling right now, that I don't know how to help my child. And that's who we are in this world for them. We're the people who help. Okay, my lovely friends, I'm going to wrap this conversation up. Are there any insights or thoughts that you're leaving with today that I can capture and follow up with?
What's really resonated with me is, and I've jotted it down, we need to trust that we can work with the student, not just that they can work with us. Now it's been said out loud, I'm thinking, oh crikey, yes, of course, yes, that has to be true.
Yeah,
that has to be true.
We're not just at the will of, we're not just, you know, have to be taking on everyone that comes our way. I used to teach my teachers that you're not really saying yes unless you can say no.
You have to say your no's are so you can say your best yeses.
That's right. That's right. And those boundaries.
Sorry, is Alexia listening to this?
Julie, what did you say about that's
so horrible?
Aren't
I? What was that? I am so horrible.
You're the best.
You're the best, Julie.
You're the best. Awesome. Okay.
Well, I've had a double dose of her today. It's been awesome.
I know. I feel so sorry for Dee.
No. This is. I wasn't actually going to come to this as well because I've already done an hour elsewhere. And I'm teaching at 2:15. I've done no prep. I've got to go out get my husband's paper, do some grocery shopping, all that kind of stuff. But no, this, yeah, I turned up here and this was absolutely the right place to be. A double dose. Julie, excellent. My Thursday is just going to be so awesome.
Excellent.
Alexia, you are muted. Go ahead.
This has been my first chat and it's been great. So thank you very much, everybody.
An absolute pleasure. Looking forward to seeing you guys next week. Have a restful weekend. Lots of love. Bye, Claire. Bye. Julie, bye, Dee, bye, Elizabeth, bye, Alexia.
Thanks, bye, everyone. Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Oh.